Good morning. Welcome to the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton, a welcoming Unitarian Universalist congregation. My name is Eileen Gillespie, and I serve as the intern minister here at First Parish Church. Childcare is available during this service in the nursery in the lower level of Fellowship Hall, which can be reached by walking through either level of the connector building and then taking the elevator or stairs to the lower level. If the need arises anytime during the service, please feel free to take your children there where they will be cared for. If you are not sure where to go, one of our ushers will guide you. Everyone is invited to coffee hour in Fellowship Hall, especially our guests this morning, after the service. To get there, please exit the church through this door, follow the hallway to the end, go down the stairs or take the elevator and follow the arrows to Fellowship Hall. If this is your first time with us, we are very happy to have you here. Please sign one of our guest books, which are located in the vestibule at the front entrance of the church, at the new main entrance, or at the visitor's table at coffee hour, so we may put you on our mailing lists. Thank you so much. And as is our custom here in this church, I invite you to warmly greet one another.
Welcome again. I think I'll just stay up here. Let them hear. Those Hebrew words from Psalm 133 that we just sang express what is in my heart this morning. How rare and good it is for people to come together as one. It is indeed rare and certainly good that two congregations, the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton and the Unitarian Church of Marlborough and Hudson, come together in worship this morning. This morning we're reminded that amidst all the challenges we face, we as individuals and as congregations are not alone. We are here for each other.
How rare it is, how lovely, to come together as one. It is fortunately quite rare. In fact, it has never happened to the Unitarian Church of Marlborough and Hudson before that we receive a communication from the town informing us that the streets surrounding our church will be closed on a Sunday morning and there will be loudspeakers and bands right outside our sanctuary for the entire second half of our service. You can imagine when this happened 10 days ago that it created a bit of a kerfluffle for us. But ultimately, we asked ourselves the question, how can we use this challenge to create an opportunity for joy? And our answer was a worship field trip. So here we are. It was heartwarming, and I really mean that. It warmed my heart when I reached out to my colleagues and I received from Tom an incredibly generous and warm welcome within a half hour of having received my email that morning. That same welcome was then extended by Michael to our choir and by Michelle to our families, children, and teens. How rare it is and how lovely. We are truly grateful to be here sharing worship with you this morning. Let us gather with celebration in our hearts as we are reminded of the strength that is generated and the possibilities that exist when we come together as one.
And now I invite lay leaders from both of our churches, Diane DeFonso, president of the Unitarian Church of Marlboro and Hudson, and Lee Cooprider, board member and treasurer at First Parish, to together bring our flames together and light one chalice. And as they do, I invite you to come together in the chalice lighting words printed in your order of service. This morning, we bring together a spark from the flame that burns within each of us and a light of our two congregations to light a single flame. May it burn as a beacon of our shared faith and with the warmth, friendship, and mutual support. May it be a flame of hope and inspire us individually and as congregations to acts of love and justice. Through us, may it shine out to a world so much in need of its light. Love is the spirit of this church and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. From all that dwell below the skies, let words of love and peace arise. Let joyful songs of praise be sung through every land by every tongue. Please be seated. You are in for a special treat, a play performed by youth from both the Unitarian Church of Marlboro and Hudson and the First Parish of Stowe and Acton. Here's one mic, and there should be another. Ah, yes. Gotcha. It's all yours, actors.
Today, we are going on a journey together to some faraway countries. We will travel over wild seas. It is an exciting adventure with something important to teach all of us. So let's get started. Once upon a time, there was a farmer who lived in the northern kingdom of Israel. His name was Jonah, and one day, when Jonah was resting, out of nowhere, a voice spoke to him.
Jonah, this is God talking. Go, get up and go to the great Assyrian city of Nineveh. The people there have become very wicked. You tell them they have 40 days to change their ways, or I will destroy them.
Oh, gee whiz, God. Why me? They're not going to listen to me. You must be crazy. Those people are my enemies. They've done horrible things to us. I don't have any desire to save them. I don't want you to forgive them. Why don't you just destroy them without any warning? That's what they deserve. Hey, God, are you listening to me? Why don't you answer?
But God did not reply, and Jonah was angry.
No way am I getting involved in this. I'm getting out of here. I'll run away to some far-off place where God can't find me.
Jonah went to the harbor, and there he found a ship ready to sail, and asked the captain,
Where are you going?
To the far-off city of Tarshish.
Oh, great. I think that's far away enough. Here's some money. Will you take me with you?
Get on board.
Soon, they set sail, but once they got to sea, trouble started. There was a terrible storm with huge waves. It tore the sails and cracked the mast, and the boat was in danger of sinking. The crew was all very scared. They had never seen a storm this bad. They threw their cargo overboard to make the ship lighter, but things only got worse. Then the captain gathered his crew. They were all from different parts of the world and believed in different gods.
This storm must have been sent by the gods. They must be very angry at one of us. Let us each pray to our own god to end the storm.
That didn't help. Then they remembered Jonah, who, can you believe it, was below deck sleeping through all of this. The captain brought Jonah on deck, and the sailors all viewed him suspiciously and said,
I'm a Hebrew, and I disobeyed my God, who told me to go to Nineveh, but I ran away instead. That is why we have this terrible storm. Cast me overboard and save yourself.
The men did not move to do so. They rowed harder and kept trying to keep the ship afloat. But finally, the captain said,
Jonah, it's no use. We must throw you over or we'll all perish.
So they threw Jonah into the water, and instantly the storm ended and the sky cleared. Jonah floated around in the ocean for a while and didn't know what to do next. Before he knew it, the water was swirling and he was being drawn towards the mouth of a whale. The whale swallowed Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the whale for 3 days and nights. He thought about all the good things in life and how he should have done what God told him to do. He prayed a lot that he would somehow get out of the whale's belly. Then all of a sudden, the whale gave a big heave and Jonah flew out of the mouth and onto land.
Wow, that was a wild ride. I wonder what I should do now.
Go to Nineveh.
Oh yeah, all right, I get it, I'll go. I'll give them a warning, but I still don't think you should forgive them.
So Jonah went to Nineveh.
Wow, this is a big place and really bad. These people are evil enemies. No way should they be forgiven. No way are they going to change. This is crazy.
So Jonah went to every corner of the city and told them they had 40 days to repent or they would be destroyed. And the people listened and said,
We have been cruel and dishonest and committed many crimes. We deserve to be destroyed, but perhaps if we change our ways, God will forgive us.
Then the king of Nineveh spoke.
It is true. I have ruled badly and the people have become evil and corrupt. It is time to change. I will take off my robes and crown, and I will wear cloth, stock, and ashes instead. And everyone, even the animals, must do the same, and we will all must fast and ask forgiveness for good deeds and do good deeds.
And everyone obeyed, and God forgave them, and did not destroy their city. Everyone celebrated, except for Jonah. He was angry and left the city and sat on a rock in the sun to pout.
God, I can't believe you did this. This isn't fair. They should have been destroyed. They deserved it. I've had it. Why don't you just take my life? I want to die.
Jonah, do you think it is right to be so angry about my forgiving of the Ninevites?
Jonah did not answer. He just continued to be angry and sit in the hot sun, hoping it would just destroy them. But one morning, Jonah woke up to find a beautiful tree had grown up, which gave him shade. Jonah sat under the tree and enjoyed the shade. But the next day, when he woke up, a giant worm had eaten all the leaves and killed that tree. So right away, Jonah called to God.
God, why did you send that worm to eat the tree? I feel sorry for the tree, and I'm angry that you killed it.
Jonah, do you think it is right to feel angry about the death of this tree?
Yes, I do.
You didn't plant the tree. You didn't take care of it. You know I watched over the people of Nineveh for a long time, and they were slow to You were concerned about that tree, but should you not have that same love and concern for the people of Nineveh? There comes a time to forgive, and holding on to anger like you are doing will only make you miserable. Think about it, Jonah.
To our children and youth and our adults, we invite you to think about that story, both reflecting in religious education as well as at home with your family. It's our custom here at First Parish that when our children and youth leave for religious education, they are led out by a light that is kindled from our common flame that we lit together. It lights a lantern and someone carries the lantern and everyone follows. Do we have a lantern bearer? Devin Sujioka is going to carry the lantern. It's an honor to carry the lantern. Thank you, Devin. And when everyone follow Devin and Michelle, remember we go around this way and then out that door if you're heading to religious education.
I invite you into a time of meditation and prayer. With the words of my colleague, Angela Herrera. Consider this an invitation to you. Yes, you. With all your happiness and your burdens, your hopes and regrets. An invitation if you feel good today. And an invitation if you do not, if you are aching, and there are so many ways to ache. Whoever you are, however you are, wherever you are in your journey, this is an invitation into peace. Peace in your heart, and peace in your heart. And with every breath, peace in your heart. Maybe your heart is heavy or burdened. Maybe it's troubled, and peace can only take up residence only in a small corner, only on the edge, with all that is going on in the world and in your life. Ni modo, it doesn't matter. All that you need for a deep and comforting peace to grow lies within you. Once it is in your heart, let it spread into your life. Let it pour from your life into the world. And once it is in the world, let it shine upon all beings. Amen. Blessed be. May it ever be so.
Shalom Aleichem. Israel, Ve'imru, Imru, Amen.
Each week in our service, we provide you with the opportunity for generosity. This morning, as we do each week, the morning offering is the non-pledge morning offering collected in the plate is split 50-50 between the church and another wonderful non-profit charitable organization, either local, national, or international. And we receive nominations from members of the congregation, and the people who nominate are people who work with these particular charities and give not of just their time but of their talents as well. And this one happens to be a nomination from one of our youth, and this month's offering will be split with the local no-kill animal shelter, Buddy Dog, which many of our youth and children have donated their time and efforts to in the past. The morning offering will now be gratefully accepted.
Freedom comes, Sandy's law. Freedom.
The reading this morning is from an article written by the Bishop Desmond Tutu and his daughter Mpo Tutu called Why We Forgive. There were so many nights when I, as a young boy, had to watch helplessly as my father verbally and physically abused my mother. I can still recall the smell of alcohol, see the fear in my mother's eyes, and feel the hopeless despair that comes when we see people we love hurting each other in incomprehensible ways. If I dwell in those memories, I can feel myself wanting to hurt my father back in the same way he hurt my mother, in ways in which I was incapable as a small boy. But I see my mother's face, and I see this gentle human being whom I loved so very much and who did nothing to deserve the pain inflicted on her. When I recall this story, I realize how difficult the process of forgiving truly is. Intellectually, I know my father caused pain because he was in pain. Spiritually, I know my faith tells me my father deserves to be forgiven as God forgives us all. But it is still difficult. The traumas we have witnessed or experienced live on in our memories. Even years later, they can cause us fresh pain every time we recall them. Are you hurt and suffering? Is the injury new, or is it an old, unhealed wound? Know that what was done to you was wrong, unfair, and undeserved. You are right to be outraged, and it is perfectly normal to want to hurt back when you have been hurt. But hurting back rarely satisfies. We think it will, but it doesn't. If I slap you after you slap me, it does not lessen the sting I feel on my own face, nor does it diminish my sadness as to the fact that you have struck me. Retaliation gives, at best, only momentary respite from our pain. The only way to experience healing and peace is to forgive. Until we can forgive, we remain locked in our pain and locked out of the possibility of experiencing healing and freedom, locked out of the possibility of being at peace.
On June 18th, we all heard the news of yet another horrible racist act in our country. A young white man went to the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, while they were having their traditional Wednesday night Bible study. It's a black church, but he, as a white man, was welcomed with open arms and sat among them listening to the words of the sacred text, hearing the teachings of Jesus. He sat among a group of extraordinary people, a pastor who is also a state senator, assistant pastors, a high school coach, a speech therapist, a librarian, young and old people, people who were doing great good in their community. This person had not had a negative encounter with any of these people. And in spite of being in the presence of their love and their faith, he shot and killed 9 of them. And for this to happen in a church, their death was a huge loss, and the only reason they were killed was because they were black. In the words of the city's mayor, it was an act of pure, concentrated evil. Perhaps the kind of evil the Ninevites in the Jonah story were guilty of. But we'll get back to that later. Even though I'm well aware that in this country there are still many places of deeply embedded racism, I was shocked by this hate crime. I was more than shocked. I was enraged. As a former district attorney, my thoughts went to swift and severe justice. As you know, I'm one who opposes the death penalty in all situations, but somehow at that moment, I think I was ready to make an exception. I hardly knew how to carry my outrage, my anger. So I continued to listen to the news, and 14 hours after the horrible murders, the perpetrator was apprehended. When he was arraigned in court just a day later, many of the victim's family members were there. They had not even buried their loved ones yet, but they came. They came forward one by one and spoke not just to the court, but directly to the man who killed their loved one. With tears of pain and voices cracking, they spoke, "I just want everyone to know I forgive you," said Nadine Collier, the daughter of 70-year-old Ethel Lance, who had been killed. "You took someone very precious away from me. I'll never get to talk to her ever again. I'll never be able to hold her again. But I forgive you. You hurt me. You hurt a lot of people. But God forgives you, and I forgive you." Another said, "We have no room for hate. We have to forgive." I could hardly believe what I was hearing. I was moved profoundly. The entire news story had changed. It was no longer about a white supremacist who committed a horrible act. It was now about how even in the greatest moments of pain, these people were going to respond from that deep place of their faith in the best part of themselves, to one who, with unbelievable hate, they responded with love and forgiveness. These people had learned something extraordinarily hard to learn from their church, from their Bible study, from that community, from being black in this country. They had learned what may well be the hardest teaching of Christianity and of Judaism and of many other religions, that we are called to love our enemy, that nothing, no matter how evil, is beyond forgiveness. They learned, as Desmond Tutu learned, that we must forgive for ourselves in order not to be trapped in a place of destructive anger. There were 9 victims of this shooter, and their families were not going to allow him to claim them as victims as well. They took the power out of his hate. Their words played over and over again in my head. It made me think about what their religion had taught them about forgiveness. Surely they'd heard the words of Jesus many times, "Love your enemy," and not forgive only 7 times, but 70 times 7, that idea of ultimate forgiveness that Jesus teaches in the Gospel of Matthew in response to the question of how many times should you keep forgiving the same person or the same wrong. They have, of course, heard, "If someone strikes you, turn the other cheek. Don't strike back. Retaliation is not the answer." It's all there in that Bible that they were studying that night. But to see it lived out in this horrible situation was just so powerful. My thoughts about forgiveness went further than just the teachings of Jesus. I thought about how so many religions have so much to say about forgiveness, and yet how rarely we see forgiveness being practiced. To forgive others who have wronged us, to ask for forgiveness, even to forgive ourselves, is difficult. Isn't that what the story of Jonah and the Ninevites from the Hebrew Bible is all about? This Tuesday, Jews all over the world will celebrate Yom Kippur. It's the holiest day of the year for Jews, and it's a day all about forgiveness. It's a day when they hear that story of Jonah and the Ninevites, which was brilliantly performed for us earlier in the service, and applying the teachings of it to their lives and to the world. You know, those Ninevites were truly evil people who perpetrated horrible cruelty on their enemies, the Jews. By the way, do you know where the ancient city of Nineveh is on today's map? In Iran, right across the river from Mosul, where ISIS has perpetrated so many atrocities. If you have any difficulty understanding why Jonah tried to run away, think about whether you would be keen on being the messenger of forgiveness to ISIS. Would you want that job? Would you think them deserving of forgiveness even if they changed their ways? Well, let's return to the story of Jonah, because all the elements of forgiveness are there. In the Jewish tradition, to forgive requires a practice called teshuvah. It involves really three things: acknowledging that the wrong you committed, making amends where possible, resolving not to do it again, and asking for forgiveness. This is what the people of Nineveh did. God forgave them, but Jonah couldn't. But let's not be so hard on Jonah. There's good reason why he could not forgive. He was concerned about justice. What about justice? What about justice in Nineveh? What about justice in those horrible events in South Carolina? What about justice in our own lives if we've been the victims of hate or abuse or really any unfair treatment? In my job as a lawyer, my prior career, first as a DA and later a criminal defense attorney, I saw lots of folks who were victims of terrible wrongs. Family members of those murdered or raped, or they themselves the victims of a violent assault, a robbery, a rape, or abuse. To suggest that these people, in their fragile state just after a crime had happened, could say they forgive their perpetrator, to me is unthinkable. But also I saw so many people who, even after years and years had passed since the crime, they were still holding tightly to their hate and their anger. They were still in the same place as they were right after the crime. They were prevented from moving on with their lives, even years later. I've seen so many who thought that they would get closure or get some peace if the perpetrator was really punished, received the maximum sentence. But in fact, they did not. It was never enough. It didn't bring them the peace they were looking for. They just continued to become victims of the crime over and over again. They wanted revenge, and nothing would satisfy that. I believe it was C.S. Lewis who described holding on to this kind of anger and revenge and pain. He described it as delicious, like feasting on a great roast. But when you're done picking away the meat, you discover the carcass you devoured was your own. Now, please understand, I believe in the importance of justice being done. And I know some of you have been victims of some very tough things: unfair treatment, abuse, assault. Perhaps you had a childhood, even like Desmond Tutu described in the reading earlier, and it has caused you great suffering. Perhaps you're sitting here now with a new wound or an old unhealed wound and thinking, how can he even talk about forgiveness when I've never had justice? So to that, I want to say to you what Desmond Tutu said. His words I want to repeat to you. Know what was done to you was wrong, unfair and undeserved. You're right to be outraged, and it's perfectly normal to want to hurt back when you've been hurt. But hurting back rarely satisfies. Until we can forgive, we may remain locked in our pain and locked out of the possibility of experiencing healing and freedom, locked out of the possibility of being at peace. Without forgiveness, we remain tethered to the person who harmed us. We are bound with chains of bitterness, tied together, trapped. Until we can forgive the person who harmed us, that person will hold the key to our happiness. That person will be our jailer. when we forgive. We take back control of our own fate and feelings. We become our own liberators. We don't forgive to help the other person. We don't forgive to help others. We forgive for ourselves. I know this is tough stuff. If the wrong that to you has been serious, it can seem impossible. Few, if any, of us can forgive at the time of the incident like those incredible families in South Carolina did. Most of us need time, just as Desmond Tutu did, to forgive his father. Most of us want justice, and we should. But wanting justice isn't enough. Sometimes it's not even possible. We have to go further in order to heal. We may never hear the person who's harmed us ask for forgiveness. We may never see that person change their ways. We may never be able to speak words of forgiveness to one who has hurt us deeply. But none of that is what really matters. For some, it may even be hard to ever use the word forgiveness. And that's okay, too. Call it forgiveness or not. What matters is that you come to a place where the wrong done to you no longer has power over you. And it often takes a long time. So I'd like to share with you another extraordinary true story that illustrates what I mean. In one of our cities, there was a drive-by shooting. An innocent young man, the only son of a loving mother, was shot and killed. He was not the intended victim. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. The young man who killed him was caught, went to court, and convicted of the crime. And as is the custom in our court system, before the judge imposed a sentence, he asked the victim's mother if she wished to say anything. She said yes. And she looked at the young man who had killed her son, and she pointed her finger at him and said, "I'm going to kill you." He was sentenced to a long time in prison. And after several years, that still distraught mother, still in the same place she was after the incident, who could not move forward with her life, decided she was going to go to the prison just once to speak to that man who killed her son. She needed to know more. She wanted to know what kind of person could possibly have done this. So she went to the jail. She learned that he didn't get any visitors. So face to face, she asked him, "How come your gang buddies don't come and see you?" "I don't know," he said. After time, she left the prison. But for some reason, she continued to visit him. A while later, as the date for his release neared, she visited again and she said, "What are you going to do when you get out of prison? You're going to need a job." He said, "I don't know." "Well," she said, "I know someone who owns a construction company, and you look good and strong. Do you want me to ask if he could give you a job?" "Sure," he said. As the date of his release became even closer, she went to the prison again, and she asked him, "You're going to need a place to live when you get out of jail. Where are you going to live?" "I don't know," he said. She said, "Well, I have an extra room in my house. It was my son's room. I guess you could live there." Well, he got out of jail. He went to work. He lived with the woman. He helped her in many ways with jobs around the house. And he lived a good life. And nothing was ever said about the tragedy that had brought them together until one day when that mother called him into the parlor, a room in the house that was used only for special occasions. And she said to him, "You remember that day in court?" And he said, "Yes." She said, "Do you remember what I said to you?" He said, "Yes, you said you were going to kill me." And she said, "That's right. And I did. The young man who killed my son is dead. The man you are today is someone whom I would be proud to call my son." He had changed his life. He could not bring the young man that he killed back, but he did what he could to make amends to the living victim of the crime, the mother. In terms of Yom Kippur, he performed teshuvah in an extraordinary way. He was forgiven. Another case of extraordinary forgiveness. Now, I hope you will never be faced with having to consider forgiving someone who's committed a horrible offense against you. But every one of us will be wronged and hurt, and every one of us will wrong and hurt others. And there will be many times when we will need to be forgiven, and many times when we will be called to forgive. There will be plenty of times when we are angry about our personal situation or the situations of the world, and we will want justice above all. Now, wanting justice isn't a bad thing, but there is more. After participating in prayers of Yom Kippur, a young child asked his rabbi, "Rabbi, does God pray?" The rabbi responded, "Yes." The child then asked, "What does God pray for?" The rabbi said, "God prays these words: May my capacity for mercy be greater than my capacity for justice." As we address the difficult questions of forgiveness and reconciliation in our personal lives and in the world, may our prayer be the same. As individuals and as a people, may our capacity for mercy and forgiveness be greater than our capacity for justice.